Voice of America.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The global hunt for who supplied Hezbollah with the thousands of pagers that exploded in Lebanon this week continued Thursday. Security sources say that Israel was responsible for the explosions that killed 12 people and injured thousands. It is not clear how and when the pagers were weaponized so they could be remotely detonated. The same question remains for the hundreds of handheld radios used by Hezbollah that exploded Wednesday in a second wave of attacks. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken urged restraint from France, where he was meeting with the French foreign ministry.
France and the United States are united in calling for restraint and urging de-escalation when it comes to the Middle East in general and when it comes to Lebanon in particular. We continue to work to get a ceasefire for Gaza over the finish line.
How and when and with whose help the pager attack was carried out was not yet known, although so far there were possible leads in Taiwan, Hungary, and Bulgaria. From Iranian hacking to Russian influence campaigns, the 2024 presidential campaign is now encountering a spate of efforts by foreign adversaries to weaken faith in the outcome and potential alter the results. The Biden administration has moved aggressively in recent weeks to call out the operations in hopes of alerting Americans to remain vigilant to wide-ranging, often hidden foreign efforts to influence their positions on hot-button positions, as well as the candidates. The latest development has come Wednesday when U.S. officials disclosed Iran's unsuccessful attempt to shop information stolen from the Trump campaign to his political adversary. You'll find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. AP correspondent Karen Chalmers reports on floods in Central Europe.
A massive flood wave moving across Central Europe is threatening new areas and raising concerns among residents and officials. Heavy rains have also caused flooding and the evacuation of some 1,000 residents in northern Italy's region of Emilia-Romagna. The death toll is rising in Central Europe as receding waters reveal the extent of the destruction. The overall death toll in the affected countries, which include Czech Republic, Poland and Romania, as well as Austria, has reached at least 24, as European Union Chief Ursula von der Leyen expects to visit the region. I'm Karen Chamas.
The coming winter will prove the sternest test yet for Ukraine's energy grid since the beginning of Russia's invasion, according to the International Energy Agency's executive director, Fadi Birol.
Only a few weeks ago, there was a major attack from Russia, damaging big chunk of the energy infrastructure in Ukraine. So this situation is very delicate now, especially winter is coming. And even before this attack, because of previous attacks on the Ukrainian infrastructure, 2/3 of the power generation capacity of Ukraine was lost.
Artillery shells sold by Indian arms makers have been diverted by European customers to Ukraine, and New Delhi has not intervened to stop the trade despite protests from Moscow, according to 11 Indian and European government and defense industry officials, as well as a Reuters analysis of commercially available customs data. Venezuela's former opposition candidate says he was coerced into signing a letter effectively recognizing his defeat in July's presidential election. Electoral authorities claim that President Nicolas Maduro won that vote. Wednesday's revelation of the letter is a later strain to the country's political crisis, which is exacerbated by the disputed election results and Edmundo González's recent departure for exile in Spain. Gonzalez and the Unitary Platform Coalition he represented claimed they defeated Maduro by a wide margin. The document states it was meant to be confidential, but Jorge Rodriguez, head of the National Assembly, presented it during a nationally televised press conference hours after local news outlet published parts of it. Colombia has suspended peace talks with the National Liberation Army, or ELN, after banning the rebel group for an attack that killed 2 soldiers and injured more than 20. Government's peace delegation announced the suspension of the dialogue process in a statement Wednesday. It is the deepest crisis of the peace negotiations with the ELN since November of 2022, and after the president, Gustavo Petro, took power as the first leftist president, launching talks with that and other armed groups under a policy known as total peace. Peace. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
unleashes heavy strikes against Lebanon.
Israel will do whatever is necessary.
The unpopularity of the Ukraine invasion is driving Russia to look for mercenaries.
They need to, from their standpoint, win the war and achieve their military objectives, achieve their war aims. And the best way for them to do it is to hire low-cost mercenaries from the global south who are willing to fight and die alongside Russians.
And Tunisia's beekeeping industry is feeling the sting of climate change.
In previous years, the climate was good and the weather was pleasant. There was a lot of rain and the bees multiplied without any help from beekeepers.
Today is Friday, September 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Scott Walterman. Israel hit more than 100 targets in southern Lebanon overnight into Friday as it ratcheted up its military action against Hezbollah.
Prime Minister has said that the change in the balance of forces on our northern border is needed and necessary.
David Mentzer, Israeli government spokesman.
Israel is responding with force to this aggression by Hezbollah. We will use all means necessary to restore security to our northern border and to safely return our citizens to their homes.
According to information published by the Israel Defense Forces, the Israeli Air Force hit about 100 rocket launchers consisting of approximately 1,000 barrels that were ready to be used in the immediate future to fire toward Israeli territory. The bombardment included more than 52 strikes across southern Lebanon after 1800 GMT and also hit terrorist infrastructure sites, according to the Lebanese state news agency, NNA. The news service Reuters is reporting that three Lebanese security sources said these were the heaviest aerial strikes since the conflict began in October. Delta Airlines has become the latest to curtail flights to Israel, announcing even before news of the strikes that it is suspending direct flights between New York and Tel Aviv through the end of the year. The reason, it says, rising tensions in the Middle East. The U.S. airline joins a host of other airlines that have canceled or suspended flights in recent days to cities in the region, including Beirut and Tehran, as fighting between Israel and Hezbollah has intensified along Israel's northern border with Lebanon. British Foreign Secretary David Lammy said on Thursday he would meet with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky in New York at the United Nations General Assembly next week to discuss the strategy going into winter with all the Russian attacks.
Well, we discussed at length how we ensure that Ukraine has all it needs militarily, politically, diplomatically, and in terms of aid to get through what will be a tough winter and into 2025.
Moscow's decision this week to expand its military capabilities, according to experts, is a sign of the stress that its military is facing in the third year of its slow-moving, full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Analysts say the mobilization's unpopularity and other factors are driving Russia to look for mercenaries from other countries. Marcus Harton narrates this report from Ricardo Marquina.
On September 16th, Russian President Vladimir Putin signed a decree to raise the size of the Russian army by 180,000 troops to 2.38 million soldiers, the world's second largest after China. Kremlin officials say the increase is due to its full-scale invasion of Ukraine, but also to respond to what Moscow describes as threats from NATO on its western flank. Russia 2 years ago called a massive mobilization that brought 300,000 soldiers into its army. But analysts say Russian leaders are having to try a different route this time. Natia Seskaria, Associate Fellow at London's Royal United Services Institute.
A mobilization that was announced by President Putin was quite unpopular inside Russia. Russia has been recruiting from other nations such as India, Nepal, Indonesia. From open sources, what we know is that these people are usually those who are unemployed, and they are willing to accept these financial incentives.
Investigative reporting by independent media, including the Moscow Times and the Kyiv Independent, found that agents have promised fighting-age people relatively high salaries in countries such as Sri Lanka, Indonesia, India, and Nepal. The Kremlin has never confirmed or denied such practices. The reports say those recruited abroad would not be assigned to mercenary forces like the Wagner Group, but to the regular Russian Army. Mark Hanna is a senior fellow at the Institute for Global Affairs in New York.
They need to, you know, from their standpoint, win the war and achieve their military objectives, achieve their war aims. And the best way for them to do it is to hire low-cost mercenaries from the global south who are willing to fight and die alongside Russians.
The number of casualties in this war continues to rise. The Wall Street Journal reports the total number of soldiers and civilians killed or wounded on both sides has already reached 1 million people. Western intelligence sources say 600,000 of them have been Russian. For Ricardo Martina, Marcus Hardin, VOA News.
Following these other stories from around the world, European Commission Chief Ursula von der Leyen has pledged billions of euros in aid for Central European countries that suffered enormous damage to infrastructure and housing during massive flooding that has claimed 24 lives so far in the region. She visited a flood-damaged area in southeastern Poland on Thursday and met with the government heads of the affected countries, Poland, Austria, the Czech Republic, and Slovakia. Thousands of people protested in Slovakia on Thursday against recent moves by the country's culture minister, whom critics accuse of censorship and poor management of public funds. Organizers said 3,500 demonstrators turned out in the capital of Bratislava, with rallies also held in more than a dozen other cities. Elon Musk's X social media platform went back offline in Brazil on Thursday, a day after it resumed service in a contravention of a judicial ban. Internet providers say that Brazil's Supreme Court had earlier in the day ordered X to suspend access to the platform, finding the company had unlawfully, persistently, and intentionally flouted judicial rulings and would risk a daily fine of more than $900,000 for non-compliance. In our continuing coverage of the 2024 U.S. presidential election, early voting in the election starts Friday in Democrat vice presidential candidate Tim Walz's home state of Minnesota. Residents of Virginia and South Dakota will also be among the first in the country to cast ballots in person. In Minnesota, voters can cast an early, in-person absentee ballot at county and city election sites between Friday and the day before the election in November. With fewer than 50 days left in this year's U.S. presidential race, candidates Donald Trump and Kamala Harris are campaigning in key swing states, each one declaring they have the policies to boost the economy. VOA correspondent Scott Stearns has this part of the story.
Donald Trump says auto worker jobs in the swing state of Michigan are threatened by the renewable energy policies of his opponent.
China is going to take over all of your business because of the electric car and because they have the material we don't. What we have is a thing called gasoline. We have gasoline. We have so much gasoline, we don't know what to do. They don't have gasoline. So why are we making a product that they dominate?
With the majority of American voters saying the economy and inflation are their top election issues, Trump running mate J.D. Vance is keeping up their campaign's push to link economic anxieties to Kamala Harris.
Exploding inflation, that's on Kamala Harris. Groceries you can't afford, that's on Kamala Harris. Housing that is unaffordable for young American families, that is on Kamala Harris.
Harris's economic proposals in this campaign include tax relief for first-time homeowners, for new parents, and for small business owners. She told black journalists in the swing state of Pennsylvania this week that part of improving the U.S. economy is overcoming the divisiveness of her opponents.
Is the price of groceries still too high? Yes. Do we have more work to do? Yes. And I will tell you, I do believe that I offer a new generation of leadership for our country that is about, in particular, turning the page on an era that sadly has shown us attempts by some to incite fear, to create division in our country, and to do the work that is about bringing some level of optimism and, dare I say, ambition about what I know is possible in our country.
Trump says he is optimistic about the country, so long as he's leading it. He says the economy would be much stronger today, with tougher tariffs on imports, if he had been reelected in 2020. In the closing days of this campaign, Trump continues to claim, falsely, that his 2020 loss was rigged.
If I didn't do well in 2020, I wouldn't even think about doing this. But we did phenomenally well, and bad, bad things happened. We're not going to let it happen again.
Harris's running mate Tim Walz is a former teacher who says Trump appears to be having a hard time understanding his loss 4 years ago.
I think I'm a pretty good teacher, and I would always give my students extra chances to learn. Sometimes you don't learn the lesson the first time. So Donald Trump did not learn the lesson the first time, but the good news is he's going to learn the lesson in November.
Harris and Walz are virtually tied with Trump and Vance in most public opinion polls in the roughly seven swing states that will decide this race. As Election Day draws closer, the campaigns will focus their money and attention almost exclusively on those states. Scott Stearns, VOA News.
World leaders gathering for their annual meetings at the United Nations starting Sunday, and the wars in Gaza, Sudan, and Ukraine undoubtedly will take center stage. VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir tells us more from the UN.
This year's United Nations General Assembly will take place against a bleak global backdrop. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
We see out-of-control geopolitical divisions and runaway conflicts, not least in Ukraine, Gaza, Sudan, and beyond.
The Gaza war is approaching its one-year anniversary, with more than 41,000 Palestinians killed and 100 hostages taken from Israel still in Hamas captivity. But progress toward a ceasefire is unlikely at the UN gathering. Randa Slim is a senior fellow at the Washington-based Middle East Institute.
I don't see much traction. I think both sides, in this case Hamas and the Israeli prime minister, seem to be gearing up for a protracted war, protracted conflict.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas are certain to focus on the war when they address the General Assembly on Thursday. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is also expected in New York. More than 2.5 years after Russia invaded Ukraine, peace remains elusive. Zelensky is likely to make his case for more military support and long-range weapons during a Security Council meeting on Ukraine on Tuesday and at the General Assembly on Wednesday. Richard Gowan is the UN Director for the International Crisis Group.
For Ukraine now, the big challenge is to stop Russia advancing in eastern Ukraine. The future of the war will be decided on the battlefield, not in the UN.
Russian President Vladimir Putin will not be coming to New York, but veteran Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov will. Diplomats will also meet to discuss the war in Sudan. Despite multiple international initiatives, there has been no ceasefire, and 17 months of fighting has displaced over 10 million people and pushed millions more into hunger. New faces at the UN this month include British Prime Minister Keir Starmer and Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian. And U.S. President Joe Biden will make his final U.N. appearance. Again, Richard Gowan.
I think there is still some respect for his engagement with multilateralism, but I think there's also a lot of regret that he didn't give the U.N. a greater role in dealing with the war in Gaza.
Following two assassination attempts on former President Donald Trump, VOA asked if the United States could guarantee the safety of more than 130 presidents and prime ministers who will be coming to New York City. U.S. Ambassador to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
We have pulled out all the stops. New York City has police everywhere. Diplomatic security is supporting Secret Service to also provide security for all the heads of state who will be here in town.
The Secretary General will kick off the marathon week of diplomacy Sunday with a two-day-long summit of the future, which aims to reform the UN system to handle new challenges, including climate change and artificial intelligence. Again, UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres.
We can't create a future fit for our grandchildren with systems built for our grandparents.
Negotiations on a substantive pact for the future have been difficult, but it is expected to be adopted. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
A candlelight vigil honoring the thousands of innocent victims who lost their lives during Iran's uprising in 2022 took place near the United Nations headquarters in New York on Thursday evening.
I'm part of the Iranian-American community. I support the National Cancer Resistance of Iran, and I'm here to denounce Pezeshkian coming to United Nations, and I would like to say that Pezeshkian is not representing the people.
We are here gathering to oppose to selected president, not elected president by Muslims, by people, selected president by Khamenei, dictator. And we came here to oppose to that, and we want to say that he is not representative of the Iranian people.
The vigil marked the two-year anniversary of the death of 22-year-old Mahsa Amini, a Kurdish-Iranian woman who died while in custody for allegedly flouting Iran's Islamic dress code. Amini's death unleashed months of protests on the biggest challenge to the Islamic Republic's clerical leaders in decades. International Edition continues. I'm Scott Walterman. The World Health Organization is delivering a huge shipment of Mpox vaccine and the supplies needed to administer it to the Democratic Republic of Congo on Friday.
More than 33 tons of supplies will be delivered to DRC, including essential commodities for testing, treating, and preventing infections. And in Burundi, WHO has addressed a critical fuel shortage to ensure that WHO, our partners, and the government can conduct their daily Mpox response activities at pace and scale.
WHO Director Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus. Congo's South Kivu province is at the epicenter of the world's latest Mpox outbreak in what the WHO is called a global health emergency. This new strain of the virus is rapidly spreading, largely through skin-to-skin contact, sparking alarm among a remote yet bustling gold mining town that attracts miners and sex workers and traders who are constantly on the move. Health officials say cases found in other parts of eastern Congo can be traced back to this city. But a lack of funds, vaccines, and information is making it difficult to stem the spread. Since the outbreak began, nearly 1,000 people in Kamatunga have been infected, and 8 have died, half of them children. Thursday was another good day for the U.S. economy following a central bank rate cut on Wednesday. The S&P 500 surged to a record close on Thursday, the day after the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by 50 basis points and indicated more rate cuts were on the horizon. Reuters correspondent Lisa Bernhard has more.
The S&P 500 closed at a record high on Thursday as Wall Street rallied one day after the Federal Reserve cut interest rates by an upsized 50 basis points. The Dow added 1.25%, the S&P jumped 1.7%, and the Nasdaq soared 2.5%. Fed Chair Jerome Powell on Wednesday indicated the rate cut, which was at the higher end of expectations, would be followed by future cuts given the strength of the economy. Liz Miller is president of Summit Place Financial Advisors.
I think that the trends we're on suggest that we should have more rate cuts. I hope to see another 50 basis points before year end. Chairman Powell certainly didn't promise that or even signal that, but where we are with the rest of our data looks like we're on a trend where we can start bringing this down. We're certainly on target for 2% inflation. Employment has been soft, but is still at high absolute levels. So what it becomes a question of is the Fed going to pivot its priority from price stability to growth? And investors certainly want to see the priority of growth moving higher.
Heavyweight stocks that have led much of this year's rally, including Tesla, Apple, Nvidia, and Meta Platforms, all saw significant gains. Making big moves in extended trading were shares of FedEx, which dropped 10% after the company cut its revenue target for its fiscal 2025. And shares of Nike gained 10% in after-hours trading on news that former senior executive Elliott Hill will rejoin the company to succeed John Donahoe as president and CEO, as the sportswear giant looks to revive sales amid rising competition.
Reuters correspondent Lisa Bernhard reporting. And finally, climate change is taking a heavy toll on Tunisia's beekeeping industry, with rising temperatures and prolonged droughts threatening bee populations and honey production across the country. Local beekeepers say they're having a tough time. Here's Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo with the buzz.
Tunisia's beekeeping industry is feeling the sting of climate change. With rising temperatures and prolonged droughts, local beekeepers say it is threatening bee populations and honey production across the country. In the region of Zaghouan, beekeeper Bilal Sliman says he witnessed firsthand the devastating impact of these environmental shifts.
In previous years, the climate was good and the weather was pleasant. There was a lot of rain and the bees multiplied without any help from beekeepers. However, in recent years, specifically the last 5 years, there has been drought, which has exhausted the bees significantly.
The beekeeper reported a loss of 65 beehives last year alone. That's about 70% of his total stock. The crisis goes beyond the challenges faced by individual beekeepers. It is affecting the entire beekeeping industry in Tunisia. Between 2021 and 2022, the region lost about 50% of its beehives. That's according to Wahid Ben Fajani, the head of the Agricultural Development Complex for Beekeepers.
The forage has decreased significantly in Zaghouan due to reduced rainfall, and another reason is a disease affecting eucalyptus trees. Additionally, fires have greatly reduced tree populations.
Shrinking honey production, coupled with increasing expenses, has led to higher honey prices and reduced incomes for beekeepers. Beekeeper Walid Nagara said that average honey production in his factory has more than halved. It dropped from 26 to just 11 pounds per hive per year.
If we do not think about using modern technologies and conducting research to combat climate change and develop disease-resistant bees, we will no longer see bees, which will in turn affect our food and agricultural products.
As of 2023, Tunisia's beekeeping industry consists of about 13,000 beekeepers managing 305,000 beehives. Approximately 75% of these beekeepers have reported decreased honey production in recent years, according to the Tunisian Ministry of Agriculture.
Reuters correspondent Dallas Rizzo. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you so much for spending this time with us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Scott Walterman.